Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, going into the show October 20th, 2011. And I'd first like to welcome a group of people. I'll say this in a few different languages, actually. We have some visitors from foreign countries tonight listening, some new listeners. And so this show will dedicate to those people. Dedicando ese programa a algunos familiares de América Sur, otros países, escuchando esta noche, bienvenidos. So with that done, I hope those people are going to enjoy the show tonight. As I said, many new listeners. First of all, a Comet Elenin update. The closest approach of Comet Elenin has come and gone, and look around you. I think the Earth is still here for most of us. Once again, that was a huge, huge misinformation campaign, whole Comet Elenin thing. And so what can you say? By the way, this was not just a bunch of goofy people running around misguided and making predictions about science that they don't really understand. This was a well-coordinated. Understand that the goofy people are goofy people, and they are used very goofy people. They're pawns in a game of disinformation. Players in this, the ones that you would see on the internet, the ones that aliens talk to them, and the aliens were confirming my work, remember that? All of this stuff was one big part of Comet Elenin, was to try and draw me in and destroy my name and work, etc. But I didn't bite that hook. I remember early in February, I was on a radio show, and a woman called in and was a caller and said, please tell us about Comet Elenin. And I thought, what do you mean, Comet Elenin? It's one of 20 little comets in the solar system right now. There's nothing to Comet Elenin. There's nothing to say. And so anyway, then all of this hullabaloo or tremendous internet YouTube videos, professionally produced, one-hour long, people giving up their lives to dedicate to the concept of Comet Elenin, et cetera, and all with my name right in the middle of it. So anyway, that's why I put a big posting on my webpage, and it's been there ever since, that there's nothing to Comet Elenin, nothing at all. At any rate, the point is that, yeah, Comet Elenin has come and gone, and nothing has happened. So just to as I've said before, and I won't have to repeat this anymore, that Comet Elenin allowed the NASA white hats to ride in and save the day. So this was a big dog and pony show. And at any rate, Comet Elenin hopefully over. But remember that these things... remember dates, that they always want to pick dates, a whole series of dates with Comet Elenin. And that's one of the big things that they try to put into disinformation campaigns. So when you see people picking dates, that's usually a pretty good first indicator that this is a disinformation campaign. For example, the crazy lady talks to alien, May 15th, 2003, Planet X is supposed to destroy the world. You know, when you see dates in somebody predicting something, remember two things. A long, long, long time ago, in fact, thousands of years ago, a pretty famous guy answered a question, and the people said, how will we know when these kind of things are going to happen? And the answer was twofold. One was that you look for the signs in the heavens, and second of all, that people will be sent, in fact, very professional people will be sent, to lead you astray. And is that ever happening with a vengeance? Okay, on to, by the way, the main science topic tonight, I will be talking about the wind and some very strange things with the wind lately. I don't know if it's been windy where you are. It's been very windy where I am. Well, there's nothing unusual about wind, but days and days and days and days and days and weeks of straight line winds coming from various directions, but always there, very powerful winds, also very underreported. That you look on the local weather and say, oh yeah, winds from the northwest at 20 to 30 miles an hour, and really the winds are from 40 to 60 miles an hour. A little bit of underreporting going on here. So at any rate, what is going on? What's causing the winds that we're seeing, the tremendous winds lately? And is this a sign of the times, or what exactly is going on? And in general, what causes winds? What is wind? Where does it come from? And I'll try and give some of the standard explanations for where wind comes from, and you'll be able to see that they don't make any sense, as with most of the fairy tale science that standard science tries to pawn off. But then I'll explain where winds really do come from, and why they are very much linked to a planet that we are now coming into electrical alignment with. It's called Jupiter. And before I forget, I have kind of a note on the side of my note page here. To coin a term tonight, I'm going to coin a term on the air. So this is October 20th, 2011, about 6 p.m. Central Time, a little bit afterwards. I'm coining the term Jupiter winds. And so the winds of Jupiter, implying that winds on Earth at certain times as a result of Jupiter are the winds on Earth, not winds on Jupiter, but winds on Earth being a result of Jupiter. So at any rate, I've already talked about Venus, the inferior conjunction of Venus, having an influence on viruses. I've talked about that as we pass through the very faint, but very much there, tail of Venus, the planet Venus. But there's also another effect with Jupiter and the other planets. We interact in various ways with the other planets. But Jupiter is special, and so I'll be talking about that tonight. The winds of Jupiter, or Jupiter winds, implying winds on Earth that are related to the planet Jupiter. And this is not astrology, this is not numerology. There's some very real associations here. So, at any rate, let me see. I'm going to talk about, I had a web page with some people in the 1990s. My work was somewhat the center of that web page during the Hale-Bopp controversy. And what an era that was. Were things crazy then? Things are crazy now, but I'll tell you, I don't think we've quite matched the Hale-Bopp era. I don't want to go into that much detail on that tonight, because I'll take away from the topic I want to talk to. But at any rate, on that webpage, I wrote an article one time. The name of the article was the following: You cannot predict the weather if you do not know what causes the weather. And it was a little expose on what causes weather. And wind is a very big part of weather. That also became a title of the chapter, and I forget which book it's in, my Atlantis to Tesla book or the weather book. I think it's in the Atlantis to Tesla book. But at any rate, those of you who have the set of book, look at the table of contents. And the title, You Cannot Predict the Weather If You Do Not Know What Causes the Weather, was a expansion on the article I wrote back in the 90s for the web page and by the same title, You Cannot Predict the Weather If You Don't Know What Causes the Weather. And it started out by talking about the Hurricane Floyd off the coast of Florida and how it was coming up the Florida coast, and standard science did not have a handle on what causes hurricanes, what causes them to move, and on also the issue of manipulated storms. But at any rate, I'll be talking, some of the undercurrents of my talk tonight will hit on topics that are in that particular piece of work. So, just to give you an idea of weather in general, wind is a very big part of weather. Where does wind really come from? And by the way, I'll be talking about winds on other planets too, on Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn specifically, some of the other planets. But the standard science story, which the fairy tale science, of says that wind is caused by sunlight. The sunlight enters the Earth's atmosphere. Now, remember that sunlight is comprised of X-rays, ultraviolet rays, and visible light, then infrared light, and all of the various frequencies of the electromagnetic spectrum coming off of the sun, a very powerful energy source, but most of that is absorbed in our upper atmosphere. Luckily, because we'd all be dead if that were not the case. So most of that light from the sun is absorbed up in the upper atmosphere. Some of it gets down to where we are, down at the bottom of the troposphere. The troposphere referring to the layer of atmosphere that governs our weather. So at any rate, the standard science story is that the sunlight enters Earth's atmosphere, heats it up, and all of the weather we see is as a result of that. Well, I did an analysis of this, a real analysis, and what I realized was that if the only contribution, the only contributing factor to our weather, if our only contributing factor was solar light, then we would have very bland weather. We wouldn't have thunderstorms, we wouldn't have tornadoes, we wouldn't have hurricanes, we'd have little slight breezes of eddy currents in the atmosphere. We'd have a little bit of weather exchange between the night side and the daytime side of Earth, where the what we call the terminator. We would have a little bit of weather there as the nighttime, as the Earth turns and day turns into night or night turns into day, whichever side of the Earth you're on. There would be a little bit of breeze there, but not much at all. We wouldn't have clouds. There's the weather we would see on Earth, if that were the true only contributing factor, would be extremely, extremely bland. So at any rate, you look at the physics of weather. For example, a thunderstorm. The standard story is that these wind currents cross, one coming one direction, one coming another, and in the middle there's some kind of spinning action. But it never looks at the physics, the real physics, of where do these winds come in the first place? Where do the winds come that cross and supposedly cause the weather systems? Another statement of standard science is that lightning comes from upturning in storm clouds. In other words, storm clouds have a vertical draft, wind, so to speak, and this somehow churns up electricity, and out the bottom, magically, comes shooting electricity, and out the top of these same cloud systems, magically, comes shooting electricity. It's the only battery in existence that I've ever heard of that has electricity shooting out of the battery. That's a pretty strange phenomenon. Now, I don't know where the meteorologists studied their physics, but if you have a battery, it's going to try and discharge within the battery. If there's no path, current path outside the battery, it would rather discharge within the battery. And so in an atmospheric situation, there's a dynamic movement. The battery or the cloud would discharge within the cloud. The lightning would not come shooting out the top or the bottom of the cloud. So at any rate, that's a very strange situation in standard science. So at any rate, the point is that none of this makes any sense. if you are trying to understand where the source of energy is for storms, etc. Okay, so at any rate, now where does I should talk about the jet streams too. That's a little bit more phenomenal. Now the jet streams are up in the atmosphere, quite high up in the atmosphere, and they rotate around the Earth. The northern latitude jet stream runs easterly, and it kind of snakes north and south, but it's like a big snake that wraps around the Earth at the northern latitudes, and it can go all the way up into the polar regions, and it can dip down very close to the equatorial regions, moving in an easterly direction. That's the same direction that the Earth rotates on its path around the Sun. The Earth is rotating in an easterly direction. That's why the Sun comes up in the east. So at any rate, if you're standing, say, looking at north, we are rotating. If you point your arm in the easterly direction, that's the direction Earth is rotating. That's why the stars, the moon, the Sun all come up in the east. Okay, so at the southern latitudes, there is also an easterly moving jet stream. It's very similar. It snakes north and south, but generally it's moving in an easterly direction. Then, around the equator, there is a jet stream that moves in a westerly direction. It moves west, rotating counter to the two northern and southern latitude jet streams. So the equatorial jet stream does not snake, hardly at all. It's pretty constant, pretty linear, and it moves in a westerly direction around planet Earth. Very close to the equator, but a little bit north for some odd reason. But the point is, standard science claims that the energy comes in from the Sun and somehow causes all our weather down here and then magically jumps up to those northern latitudes in high altitude and the southern latitudes in high altitude and around the equator and causes the jet streams. It's an impossible situation. It's impossible because you cannot have an unorganized body of energy down below, very mild energy, all of a sudden organizing into these fast-moving jet streams up at high altitudes. How on earth does that happen in terms of physics? Well, it's impossible. It contradicts the second law of thermodynamics. All of this is goofy science. So at any rate, the question is, where do these winds really come from? What is the real source of wind on planet Earth? Okay, so let's look at the electrical situation. The Earth sits in the solar wind. We have a magnetic field, which in the geological Earth, in the physical Earth, we have a permanent magnetic field. Then there also is somewhat of a electrical current, but the real electrical current that drives our magnetic field is up in the ionosphere. The ionosphere, and then coming down a little bit lower to the jet streams, those easterly moving jet streams are positively charged. They're positively charged and they're moving, they're coupled to the magnetic field. There's also the equatorial jet stream moving westerly is electrons, primarily electrons, and it's moving in a westerly direction. So these two northern southern jet streams couple with the equatorial jet stream and create basically a magnet. They are coupled to a layer of magnetic streaming that occurs outside our atmosphere called the Van Allen belts. That then in turn couples to a magnetic field that lies out, extends out about 30,000 miles from Earth. This is our geomagnetic field. Okay, so basically all of these magnetic fields involve moving charged particles. That's where the jet streams come from. They are literally ionized bodies of air that are moving with the magnetic field of Earth. And these are then driven by the solar wind that passes around the Earth. As the solar wind of positive and negative charged particles moves towards the Earth, and it sees this magnetic field, the electrons move one way in the magnetic field, the protons and other positively charged particles move the other way, which once again drives this coupling of magnetic fields. So all of these magnetic fields are coupled together, but that solar wind coming out constantly blowing the electrons east, the protons west, so to speak, around the planet, causes the a coupling or a driving of these magnetic fields. All of them are coupled all the way down to the jet streams. So the jet streams, these winds of jet, they call them jets because they can move at 600 miles an hour, the same velocity as jets, literally airline jets. So the point is that the jet streams are an essential part of coupling of our magnetic fields on Earth. Okay, so that's where the jet streams come from. The jet streams, in turn, fuel the winds down below. Sometimes those jet streams can come down low. They can dip down. A number of years ago, the jet streams were dipping down. There was some severe wind in China. 200-mile-an-hour straight-line winds in China. There were straight-line winds in the United States. Every place was experiencing these extreme straight-line winds. And there were causes of that at the time. But the point is that this is all driven from outer space. It has really relatively nothing to do with this solar energy, that's just the solar light energy that comes from the sun. It is electrical. It's driven electrically, which has a magnetic coupling, and that's literally where the magnetic fields come from, or the jet streams come from. It's a coupling to these magnetic fields. Okay, so if you're not a scientist and you're wondering about electric versus magnetic fields, there's a simple rule in physics. Take a charged particle, for example. When that charged particle moves, let's start at the very basics. If a charged particle is just sitting there, it has no magnetic field. It has uniquely an electric field. When that electric field moves, the relativistic component of that is the magnetic field. So that is basic fundamental properties of physics. Magnetic fields in outer space and plasma physics, these magnetic fields don't simply exist on their own. It's one of the fundamental flaws of modern plasma physics in the standard science that you would see in scientific meetings. These magnetic fields just don't simply exist on their own. They have to have a source. So at any rate, the source is moving electrons. Well, electrons and charged particles, I should say, not just electrons, but primarily electrons, because they're the easiest ones to move around in outer space. But they don't move unless there's an electric field. So where do you get the electric field? Well, the sun is creating the electric fields that drive the electric currents. The electric current movement is what causes the magnetic fields. Those magnetic fields are what drive our winds on planet Earth. These are all electrically based, driven by the electrical conditions on the sun. And this is something that standard science simply does not understand. So you go all the way back to plasma physics, you go to solar physics, you go to meteorology, and you go to atmospheric sciences. Not a single one of them teaches these basic fundamental facts. And why? Because you have to understand that the majority of the people in these fields don't have any physics background, or very poor. They stopped taking their physics courses way too early, and they got degrees in astronomy, in meteorology, in planetary science, etc. And they don't have a very good physics background. So they never knew enough to ask the basic questions. Could this be real? And so, at any rate, the winds, so just to give you a summary, the winds on planet Earth are driven by electrical conditions that are outside our planet. Now, and this, of course, is explained in detail in my books, in the weather book, and starting back in the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book, all of this is explained in detail. The point is that now we are experiencing all over the world, once again, in the last week or two, by the way, I should mention, tonight I'm bringing you this show from a very remote location. And I'm set up, I have kind of like a little command module, you might call it, and a deer just ran in front of me here, and outside my small, my little command module, where I'm broadcasting from tonight. I'm using my remote setup, and so I hope this is clear. If you're getting a little static or a little hum or a little unusual noise tonight, that would be why. But at any rate, a deer just ran in front of me here as the sun is going down. Okay, so now with the understanding where winds come from, how could planet Jupiter affect our winds? Oh, another deer. There was a, looks like two mamas and a bunch of babies are following. At any rate, okay, Jupiter, like all of the planets, is discharging the solar capacitor. Earth is discharging the solar capacitor. Comets discharge the solar capacitor much more than the planets because they're on elliptical orbits. They're breaking that gradient of the electric field much more than the planets. And so the comets are much more electrically charged. They have a much bigger electrical discharge current passing through them. They are attracting a lot more material into their region than the planets. The planets are in nice circular orbits. That's all a result of my studies of physics of the planet, of electrodynamics of the planets. But now, what happens? Earth is discharging the solar capacitor. I always like to use this term, that the electrical size of the planets is much, much, much bigger than the physical side. When we think of planet Earth, we think of a round planet with oceans and mountains and atmosphere. And we've all seen pictures from outer space of Earth, and it looks like a big blue ball. But the electrical size is millions of miles long. The electrical discharge from the sun out to outer space, far beyond the reaches of Earth in the solar system, the electrical conditions cause the Earth to be very, very large electrically. So it is with Jupiter. Jupiter is a much bigger planet. It has a much bigger electrical discharge of the solar capacitor. And this electrical discharge is in the direction of, it's linear with the sun. So it's a line between the sun, Jupiter, and an out beyond. So now what happens when Earth, which is an inner planet in the solar system, becomes electrically aligned with Jupiter? Now you're starting to hopefully get the picture of what's happening here. This month, I believe it's October 28th, now, I don't have my notes here, and I know I announced this on last week's show, and I know I should remember this date, but I think it's the end of October when the actual conjunction of Jupiter and Earth occurs. That is the perfect alignment of Earth and Jupiter and the Sun, with Jupiter, the alignment is Sun, Earth, Jupiter, in that order. So we're passing between Jupiter and the Sun, but the electrical connection with these snaking electrical discharges can start occurring much earlier. And so that's what's happening now. We're starting to connect electrically with Jupiter. And so that's what's driving the winds, this series of wind systems that we're seeing that'll blow for 10 or 20 or 30 days in a row, tremendous winds. And it's very strange to see also that this is very much underreported by the weather, whatever weather reporting you look at. And this all comes from the National Weather Service, we might remember. The average, if you have your little local radio station or TV station and they're reporting the weather news, they don't do that themselves. They probably have a lot of equipment there, but that's all tied into the National Weather Service. And the real data that they draw on comes from, and the predictions, etc., all come from the National Weather Service, the national center, so to speak, processing center for weather. So at any rate, the weather reporting of wind velocity has been very, very much underreported. And I started noticing this maybe a month ago. I started noticing that the wind velocity was 30, 40, 50 miles an hour, and the reporting would say, 10 to 20 miles an hour. Or 20, if the weather reporting said 20 to 30 miles an hour, then the real winds were like 40 to 60 miles an hour, and not just a little wind. Days and days and days and days of wind like this. Just steady wind. And I know everybody out there listening has experienced this. Now, right now where I am, it's very calm. That typically occurs when sundown occurs. There's a kind of a transition between day and night, and the earth is in what we call the terminator, that line between light and darkness on planet Earth. There's usually a calm in the wind and a change in the wind direction, etc., at that point. And so where I am right now, it's very calm, although it was blowing at about 50 miles an hour most of the day where I've been. And I called around to other people just to check. And so it's safe to say it's something I've been tracking recently, like I say, within the last month. And more and more and more, we're getting these very strong, powerful, straight line, all day, sometimes all night winds. And the weather reporting is telling you, it's a 20-mile-an-hour wind from the northwest, when really it's twice that or more. So why the under-reporting? The only thing I can say it is has to be intentional, because the data is being gathered by equipment. And equipment is hopefully calibrated correctly. One would hope so, the National Weather Service. So the point is that we have had a serious underreporting of wind velocity recently. Now, I can only surmise that that's intentional. I can only determine from a scientific standpoint that, one day you might be off a little bit, but day after day after day, consistently underreporting of the real velocity of wind. That I wanted to make sure you understood. There's a couple other things that have been going on here. We are now out of what I call the August return current sheet. And I noticed some very strange things this year. There's a measurement of the solar wind, that wind of electrical particles coming off the sun. It's called the dynamic pressure. It's kind of like if you took your hand and put it in front of a garden hose. If you increase the pressure, then literally it's the pressure on your hand measuring it. Well, there are instruments in outer space that measure the dynamic pressure of the solar wind. How hard is it hitting? What's the density? What's the force, or what's the pressure? Pressure is force per unit area of your hand or the sensor. What is that pressure coming off the sun? And lately, it's been very low. It's been very, very low. And so typically when we have winds like this, that pressure should be extremely high. And so there's something very strange going on. It's not the winds we're seeing, this is what I'm saying. The winds we are seeing are not coming from activity from the sun. Now, what else could be going on here? Well, as I said, something else very, very big is going on. We are connecting into the Jupiter current sheet. and it's connecting to Earth's current sheet. And so basically what we're seeing is we're not seeing solar wind driving this. The solar wind is almost zero. It's very low pressure, certainly nothing that would cause the kind of winds that we're seeing here. We are connecting into Jupiter's current sheet. I remember back in the 1990s, the military had some of its sensors out, and they detected a lightning bolt hit Earth from Jupiter. And it knocked, the reason they noticed this is because their military satellites got a big jolt. They were able to determine that that jolt of electricity came from Jupiter. So it's very strange that they measured directly what Velikovsky was talking about. The ancients talked about the lightning bolts that Jupiter was tossing off. And we all understand this from mythology, where Jupiter was tossing lightning bolts around the solar system. And I remember the movie, if you've ever seen the movie Fantasia, it's a Disney movie about, in the movie there's a pastoral, what is it, Beethoven's pastoral, and they have a series of scenes, and then it begins to rain and storm, and Jupiter is up there tossing lightning bolts. Well, this is out of mythology. And so the mythological story is that Jupiter was tossing lightning bolts around the solar system at the other planets. This really happened. Why did it happen? Because the electrical conditions in the solar system, that's when Venus was moving through the solar system, the daughter of Zeus, Venus, and Venus was a large comet. So the entire solar system was really electrically active at that time. And eventually the comet Venus became the planet Venus. This would be a good time to take off and start talking about the winds on the other planets. Now you understand why the winds on planet Earth, where they come from. They come from electrical conditions that are beyond Earth. I'm going to talk now about weather, wind patterns on the other planets. Let's start out with little Mercury. There's been some very interesting activity with planet Mercury recently. And actually, Mercury is the epitome of a small comet. It's in a somewhat of an elliptical orbit around the sun, very close to the sun. But it has an atmosphere, a very faint atmosphere of helium. It's an atmosphere that is caused. It's the same type of atmosphere that a comet has. A comet has a big circular, globular, spherical, I should say, cloud of hydrogen and more faint of helium surrounding it. And it's a big global gas cloud, very faint. Why is that there? That's there because it's electrically neutralizing the charge on the comet. And Mercury, as I said, is a planet, but it's also a comet. Acts very much like a comet, discharging the solar capacitor. And it also has two interesting nodes or nodules of gas coming out the nose side. Now, in the ancient days, the ancients talked about the horns of the beast. Remember that? If you look closely in the old legends and the old tales, etc., the horns of the beast. There are many different aspects to the beast. And one of them is the comets. The horns of the bull is another one of their ancient references. In a comet, in a well-developed, very high-powered comet, there are two plasma nodes that come out the sunward side of the comet, and they look like horns. They look like horns of a bull. So symbolically, if you were here on Earth and you saw a big comet up in the sky, a big, fully developed comet, not like the little poof balls that we see today in the solar system, not the little comet Elenins or the comet Halleys. The big, big comets, the big, well-developed comets will develop a set of horns coming out the side. It's a plasma effect. Mercury exhibits that on a very small scale and certainly would not be visible to the naked eye, but the sensitive instruments that scientists have sent up there with a probe that's orbiting Mercury, they have seen and identified the horns of the bull around the planet Mercury. Okay, so in a sense, Mercury doesn't have an atmosphere, not like Earth, not like Venus, or not like Mars, but it has a cometary type of atmosphere. And so that's the planet Mercury. Planet Venus is a very new planet, very hot, very volcanic, stiflingly hot, about 900 degree centigrade in the atmosphere, and hot enough to melt lead. Very extensive atmosphere, about 1,000 times more dense than planet Earth. Just a tremendously dense, potent, hot, steaming sulfuric acid in the atmosphere. So Venus, but oddly enough, Venus does not have any wind at the surface. This is one of the dichotomies, or one of the contradictions, the scientists, starting with Carl Sagan, who said, oh, the high temperature of Venus is due to the greenhouse effect, which was a band-aid theory that came after the fact. Remember that scientists thought that they would get to Venus and see dinosaurs, possibly, because there was a big CO2 cloud atmosphere around Venus. And they get there, and it's a hot, very hot, steaming hot planet. Sulfuric acid raining out of the sky, sulfuric acid clouds. So you can imagine this is a extremely hostile environment. So all of a sudden, standard science had to quick get back to the drawing board and try and come up with a rationale for why Venus had this tremendously high temperature. Well, they said, oh, this is the greenhouse effect. That was Carl Sagan's big claim to fame. And it turns out that it couldn't possibly be true. One of the reasons is that the nighttime temperature of Venus is exactly the same as the daytime temperature of Venus. Unlike the Earth, Venus rotates very, very, very slowly. So you could imagine Earth, if Earth did not rotate and only one side received sunlight from the sun and the dark side never received any, it would be very cold on the dark side and very hot on the sunward side, certainly quite a bit of a differential. Just a simple example, as we go into nighttime from daytime, the Earth's temperature will drop 20 degrees easily. Well, if Earth never turned and we only had sun on one side, well, that's hot, the sun side would heat up. But the dark side would plunge into extreme cold very quickly. Within a couple days, it would be below zero. Within a week, it would be extremely cold on the dark side. Well, Venus does not rotate, yet it has equal temperatures within a fraction of a degree all the way around the planet. And there are no winds. There are no surface winds on Venus. So how does this hot temperature from the greenhouse effect get around to the night side? Well, it doesn't. It's a goofy fairy tale science theory that never worked from the first place. And there's about a dozen other reasons for why the greenhouse effect doesn't work on Venus to cause the high temperature that we see on Venus. But to give you an analysis of the winds on Venus, Venus really doesn't have winds. It's stagnant. It's stale. There are no winds at all. There's no magnetic field on Venus. Therefore, there's no coupling to the solar wind that would cause the solar wind to the electrons to go one way, the protons to go the other way, like on Earth. And so there's nothing to drive a wind system on Venus. That's a perfect example of what I was saying before. If it were only dependent on sunlight, Earth would not have any winds, we wouldn't have tornadoes, we would not have hurricanes, we would not have clouds, we would have very bland weather. And the most of the weather of Venus is actually caused by the volcanism. The volcanism that occurs on the base part of the planet. So at any rate, that's the planet Venus. Now let's jump out to Mars, the next planet after Earth. What causes the wind systems on Mars? Well, Mars has a very slight magnetic field, so it does have some wind systems. But Mars can develop some very serious winds. We know that annually there are massive dust storms on Mars. Well, once again, these are part of the electrical system of coupling between the slight magnetic field. Now, there's another idiosyncrasy of Mars, and I have a picture, I believe it's in the weather book, of a hurricane on Mars. You can see the hurricane. It's big enough that with a good telescope you could actually see this hurricane revolving around Mars and in the atmosphere of Mars. Well, according to standard science, according to standard meteorology, hurricanes are caused by air passing, storm systems passing over warm water. Remember the warm water theory? In that if there's more salt content in the water, you can have a bigger hurricane. More fairy tale science from standard science community. But on Mars, there's no water at all. Not a drop. There's no ocean. There's no water. So how does a hurricane form on Mars? Well, clearly, hurricanes don't form because of warm water. I always give many examples whenever I see one of himicanes. I call them overland hurricanes, and because they're overland, I coined the term himicane to indicate that they are overland hurricanes, not over water. So the overland hurricanes, how do those form? But there again, standard science doesn't want to classify those as hurricanes, even though they look like a hurricane, they act like a hurricane, they have band clouds, they have an eye, they have all the properties of a hurricane. Remember that the perfect storm, the movie is made out of it. There were three hurricane storms that joined into one in the North Atlantic. I think it was in the month of November. I can't remember when it was, but it was in early November, because one of the storms came across the North Canadian border with Canada and the United States. It was a tremendous himicane, and I happen to know a little bit about this because I lived through that himicane. I happened to be in Minnesota at the time. It was 1991, and it was the great October Halloween blizzard of 1991, October. Look it up, and it snowed 36 inches one day, and the next day it dumped another 36 inches. After the eye of the hurricane passed over Minnesota, we got the dumping from the other side of the hurricane. It was a himicane. Tremendous winds, tremendous weather. And Minnesota is a place that's prepared for snow. It's kind of like the mountains of the Rocky Mountain states, for example. They're prepared for snow. They know it's going to snow. They're ready. They got all of the tools and stuff. And in Minnesota, there's no place on the planet that has bigger trucks or bigger plows or more of them in the state of Minnesota, and the whole place was shut down. The plows were stuck in the snowdrifts; they couldn't move. So, at any rate, that was a himicane. And so, hurricanes do form over land. Standard science doesn't recognize this, and hurricanes on Mars, where there's no oceans. Tremendous dust storms on Mars and tremendous tornado systems, all of these being electrical conditions on the dealing with Mars. Okay, let's jump out to one more spot, a little place called Jupiter. That's the planet I was talking to tonight. Jupiter and Saturn are very similar, but they have a little bit different situation. They are small stars. I don't think Jupiter or Saturn should be called planets. I think they should be classified as small stars, exactly what they are. They have star-like atmosphere. They have identical atmosphere as the sun. Why would we call them a planet? They have extremely big atmospheres with a relatively small core, just like the sun. They have fusion in their atmospheres. They're giving off proton winds, just like the sun. They have low levels of fusion. They give off far more heat than they receive from the sun. So why do we call them planets? They're not planets. They're stars. So we have two stars, and they have the counter-rotating belts, just like the sun has. You can see the spots, like the Great Red Spot and other spots develop. They can come and they can go based on electrical conditions outside of the planets. So Jupiter and Saturn, they both have serious magnetic fields. And so those counter-rotating bands of those beautiful colored bands that you see on those planets are driven by high-altitude electrical currents. The plus currents go in one way, the negative currents go in the other way, and they're numerous belts, and they interact, and they also interact with electrical conditions and magnetic conditions outside of those planets. So very complicated. Not only do you have the magnetic fields in the upper atmosphere and in the inner atmosphere of those planets coupled together magnetically, being driven also by the solar wind that's passing by, you have fusion in those atmospheres driving the weather systems, very complex weather systems on those planets, stars, excuse me. So at any rate, now going back to the main science topic, the winds we are seeing on Earth today, and I know you all have experienced these very severe winds, 40 to 60 mile an hour. That's enough to cause damage. That's enough. I was up in the Canadian Rockies this past summer, and it was at the very beginning of this windy period. It was in September. And so, it was about mid-September when all of this wind was starting. And I was with some people, and we were on a point not too high. It was off of one of the glaciated channels up in the Canadian Rockies. And the wind was coming down there a good 60 to 70 miles an hour. And you couldn't walk. You could not walk. It would literally blow you away. And if you got near an object where the wind was passing around real fast, you could feel the eddy currents. It would shake you back and forth. It was incredible. But, 60 to 70 mile an hour wind, you can't walk. You're not going anyplace. I just wanted to mention also here, Noah. Remember a guy named Noah? And then he built an ark. And by the way, this is something I always wanted to know. Who tipped Noah off? And the story is that God came to Noah, gave him an assignment to build this ark. Well, the ark wasn't small. And by the way, they didn't have sawmills back then. The ark was about a football field and a half long. This was a big ship. But one thing I noticed, if you look at the dimensions of the ark, it's three stories tall. It's very narrow. It's a very narrow boat, and it's not very tall. The ark was not a very tall boat, and it was very narrow. Why? Because it was meant to be in the wind. The tremendous winds that were there at the time, just a second. It was meant to be in the winds. Now, anybody who's been on a boat knows what a sea anchor is. A sea anchor is basically a big parachute, a cloth parachute or a fiber parachute, and you throw it off of the bow of the boat. And now what happens is the wind is trying to blow the boat one direction. You throw the sea anchor, it drags in the sea, and it keeps the boat pointed into the wind. Now, Noah didn't have a motor. He didn't have sails. He just had a big ship. So you better believe he had a sea anchor. And they didn't really talk about that. Now, that had to be one big sea anchor to keep the ark directed into the wind. And so one of the unspoken parts of the Noah's flood situation is the wind. There were tremendous wind and storm and waves. This boat had to ride out some serious, serious weather conditions on the ocean. I've often said that there is no such thing as a big boat on the ocean. I don't care what size your ship or whatever. There's no such thing as a big boat on the ocean. So anyway, I wanted to mention that about Noah. But at any rate, I hope with this explanation, you now understand about the term I coined, the Jupiter winds, referring to winds on Earth caused by an electrical alignment with the planet Jupiter. Just a quick product update before I'm off the air tonight. Remember, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. I'm right now in the middle of reprinting two more of the books, the Planet X and the Atlantis to Tesla books. We still have them in stock. We should have a continuous stock. But if you're thinking about making a purchase, now would be a good time. It will help out with those reprint costs, which are fairly steep, but it's something that I do to keep all of this moving, to keep that information going out to you. And by the way, the Planet X book, Planet X Comets and Earth Changes, is still selling as well today as when it first came out. Same with the Atlanta to Tesla book. All of the books are selling equally as the time when they first came out, which is, I believe, fairly impressive. They've stood the test of time. They're not written for today or 1 week time period. They're written for all time. So also, remember that the Dalton water filters are there. And make sure you get the fluoride. A lot of people are waking up to the fact that in emergency, you still need that arsenic fluoride filter. So that's important to understand. The arsenic is one of the chemicals that's already in groundwater, and in case of severe flooding, that could become very handy, in fact, a necessity. What else? The pre-filter is there. That's still something that, one thing I notice about the web page, there's not something, one particular thing that people purchase all the time and leave the other things unnoticed. Everything there are items that people need, really need, and so they're constantly moving, let's put it that way. It's a constant flux of ordering on all the products. So that tells me I'm doing something right. Remember the webpage, jmccsci.com, seven letters. I guess I'm out of time. Good night. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.